This, then, is what it actually means, in practical terms, to approach the Buddhist canonical literature as literature. It means reading the Buddhist canonical literature for enjoyment, reading it as a whole, reading it, wherever appropriate, as poetry rather than as prose, and reading it for its own sake rather than for the sake of some ulterior purpose. But before bringing these reflections of mine to a close, I would like to make it clear that when I speak of approaching Buddhist canonical literature as literature, I do not mean to imply that that literature is all equally literature, or all literature in the same sense of the term. A distinction made by De Quincey will be useful here. According to De Quincey, there are two kinds of literature. There is first the literature of knowledge, and secondly, the literature of power. The function of the former is to teach. The function of the second is to move. The first is a rudder, the second an oar or a sail. The first speaks to the mere discursive understanding. The second speaks, ultimately, it may happen, to the higher understanding or reason. In another place, De Quincey goes so far as to suggest that the literature of knowledge is not really literature at all. All that is literature seeks to communicate power. All that is not literature seeks to communicate knowledge. In the last analysis, the difference between the two kinds of literature, or two kinds of communication, would seem to be one of degree, rather than one of kind. Literature is not all equally literature, or all literature in the same sense of the term, in that some works of literature communicate more power and therefore move us more than do others. In the case of the Bible, the book of Job moves us more than the book of Leviticus, even though the book of Leviticus contains a great deal more information about the ancient Jewish sacrificial system. Thus, the book of Job belongs to the literature of power. It is literature proper. It is great literature. Applying this to the Buddhist canonical literature, we may say that the Mahaparinibbana Sutta moves us more than does the Dhatukata. I'm taking extreme examples to make the distinction clear. The Vimalakirti Nirdesha more than the Suvikranti Vikrami Paripritcha, and the confession chapter of the Suvarna Prabhasha Sutra more than the Shunyata chapter of the same work. Thus, the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the Vimalakirti Nirdesha, and the confessions chapter of the Suvarna Prabhasha Sutra all belong to the literature of power, while the Dhatukata, the Suvikranti Vikrami Paripritcha, and the Shunyata chapter of the Suvarna Prabhasha Sutra all belong to the literature of knowledge. Since it is the literature of power that constitutes literature in the real sense, or great literature, reading the Buddhist canonical literature as literature therefore means reading such works as the Mahaparinibbana Sutta rather than such works as the Dhatukata. Indeed, we might even go so far as to say that just as literature is not all equally literature, so canonical literature is not all equally canonical literature, and that it is more truly canonical the more deeply it moves us. This is not to say that, from the Buddhist point of view, there is a real distinction between teaching, which according to De Quincey is the function of the literature of knowledge, and moving, which according to De Quincey is the function of the literature of power. From the point of view of Buddhism, the Buddha teaches by moving, because his teaching is addressed not to what De Quincey calls the mere discursive understanding, but what we might call the alienated intellect, but rather to what De Quincey calls the higher understanding or reason, or what we might call the heart, in the sense of the deepest part of our being, or the spiritual intuition, or the whole man. Reading the Buddhist canonical literature as literature, therefore, means reading it as the literature of power, and allowing ourselves to be moved by that power to the fullest possible extent.